Hi, Mike Gibson, Dean Kiriakis, talking about the Disrupt 3 trial. Dean, talk to us a little bit about what you found.
Well, thanks, Mike. As you know, we just published the final paper and follow-up of 2 years for this trial, the pivotal trial for U.S. FDA approval of coronary intravascular lithotripsy, or IVL. And that's all we were required to do. This is 384 patients in an intention to treat population. As you know, these patients were specifically selected to have severe coronary calcification. In fact, I would submit that this is the most calcified group of patients ever enrolled into an IDE trial. If you actually look at the 100-patient OCT subgroup from this trial, the average calcium mark is 290 degrees by OCT, and the average thickness of that calcium is 0.96 millimeters. 100% of these patients were independently adjudicated by the sera coronary as being severely calcified. That said, you know, both the in-hospital and 30-day data published in the pivotal paper with John Hill, myself, and the group, the one-year outcomes that we put in JSCI are remarkable. And these are the two-year outcomes, complete follow-up. And what we found is that if you look at the primary safety endpoint of the trial, which was freedom from MACE at 30 days, the primary effectiveness endpoint, which was procedural success, defined as stent delivery with a less than 50% residual stenosis, no in-hospital MACE. We also did sensitivity analysis with a more contemporary definition using less than 30% residual stenosis, no difference. All of these, which were objective performance goals established based on the Orbit 2 trial, were wildly successful. As you know, we hit the mark 30 days. At 1 year and 2 years, the target lesion failure rates are 11.9 and 16%. The ischemia-driven target lesion revascularization rate, which is very important in a subset of patients where you have this level of coronary calcification, were only about 4 and 6%, 6% IDTOR, 6.4 to be exact, at 2 years. Stent thrombosis rates from 30 days to 1 year, one patient. From 1 year to 2 years, one patient. So I think what's proven here secondarily is the impact of MSA, you know, the minimum stent area was achieved that we can discern from the pooled analysis of CAD 1 through 4, but also the CAD 3, which was the largest substudy of OCT imaging, where you actually had baseline following IVL, following stent, serial OCT images for comparison. Again, the core lab was CRF, and you can see the impact of optimizing stent expansion, which in our trial was greater than 100%, regardless of quartile of calcium mark, all the way up to 360 degrees of calcium mark, greater than 100%. It's 105% in the 360-degree group. And MSA, greater than 6 for all of those quartiles of calcium arc. And the severity of calcification did not impact those key measures, which we think, as you can, I'm sure you would comment on, correlate with clinical success and better outcomes in long-term follow-up. So it all made sense to me that it would be good clinical outcomes when you optimize stent expansion and minimum stent areas. And it looks like that works now.
So, Dean, what about in-lab complications, things like no reflow? Was there a difference there?
You know, I can tell you honestly, this is a single-arm study. I've said that. The performance goal, I thought, was the best performance goal you could possibly do. I mean, we even correlated CKMB for the 47 international sites so that everybody could have the same definition of myocardial infarction, including periprocedural myocardial infarction that was used in Orbit 2. So we had the exact same definition. And I think that when you look at the in-lab complications, they may be the lowest that we've seen with any calcium-modifying technology. In fact, you brought it up, perforation, abrupt closure, no reflow, zero in CAD3 after IVL alone. And then we pooled 628 patients, you know, from 72 sites, 12 countries. We put that paper, pooled analysis in JACC Intervention. And it's incredible. Zero, zero, zero. Perforation, abrupt closure, no reflow, following IVL alone. So I think those helped the SCAI consensus document or guideline recommendations that this technology, because of what appears to be safety of a calcium-modifying technology, is okay to be used in cath labs that don't have on-site surgical backup.
Yeah, I mean, that seems to be the clinical experience, that you have less, no reflow, less complications, getting the same kind of angiographic and intravascular imaging results. Dean, so where do you see the two technologies now fitting into clinical practice?
Well, you know, that's been looked at. Neil Butala and Bobby Yeh presented at SCAI last year. It's been really kind of meteoric to take off. IVL has become the number one calcium modifying technology in the United States today. There is complementarity, I think, in sequential use. You know, we reported the PAS data, that post-approval study, where we took 1,212 patients that had the same CAD3 inclusion-exclusion criteria. And we wanted to see, how does this work when you turn it loose into real-world clinical practice? And in fact, it's pretty remarkable. When that happens, we, despite the fact, and I point this out, that we use the same inclusion-exclusion criteria as CAD3. Those people in the PAS post-approval study were older, had more CABG and hyperlipidemia by history, and clear-cut trends for more kidney disease and hypertension. A lot more multivessel procedures, which were excluded by protocol in CAD3. And despite that, you know, our observed death rate in the hospital was 0.2% compared to CAD3, 0.3%. And it, we even applied a predictive model based on our patients, the 1,212 patients enrolled in PAS. It's called the Castro-Dominguez model, derived from the NCDR, which is the database that we leveraged to look at these data. It's the first post-approval trial of a device might they leverage NCDR data to innovatively, you know, assess the impact, the assimilation and the impact in clinical practice. And there's a compared to the predicted at 0.3%, the observed at 0.25%, there's a 21% relative reduction, not statistically significant. But when you turn this loop, I mean, even first-time use on a national basis, I think it's ease of use. I've often said this, they leverage the most primitive device you and I or any interventional radiologist, vascular surgeon, you know, anybody who works with balloon catheters learns this stuff their first day of fellowship. And they put a leading-edge technology into primitive delivery system called a balloon. So this reproduced, in my mind, what we found in CAD3 with the learning curve. There really was no learning curve. The first case at each of the 47 centers had the same primary safety, primary effectiveness, even device crossing rates of the next 384 enrolled in the ITT population. So I think ease of use, effectiveness, and the other thing was incremental reimbursement has been the secret sauce, so to speak, to bring this technology to the forefront for calcium modification.
I think this, along with the guideliner in recent years, in my estimation, have been two of the more important advances. Dean, thanks. Thanks for sharing your Saturday morning with me. And thanks to all of you for joining us here.
Hey, always great to talk to you, Mike. Thanks for the invitation.